Om Shanti, good morning. Ooh, it's a bit scary up here. This is nice. I told Bab I prefer small class chit-chat. Actually, I was supposed to do the class a couple of days when the group was very small, but we got double booked. You know when you get asked to conduct meditation, and you're just about to go on the stage, and someone else goes up and sits on the gaddy. So we got rescheduled. Can I just see who's here for the first time in Madhuban? Seems like a lot of new faces. Good. Not too excited. I remember the first time I came to Madhuban, and Daddy Janki gave us some very, very good advice. Because you know when you first time you come, you think, I've got to do this and I've got to do that. I must make all these fantastic efforts. And Daddy just said, just be so conscious, be very natural, and enjoy yourself. And it's an interesting word, the word enjoy, you know? In joy, to stay in a state of joy and happiness. And today's Morley Baba was equating happiness with mother of happiness. Purity, yeah. So it's a nice topic to explore, this thing of how purity is connected with being natural. Who feels their Brahmin life is completely natural? Coming, okay. Who feels it could be more natural? You know what they say, that you have to teach what you need to learn. So, usually, sometimes when they ask you to share something, a couple of years ago, I was feeling, normally before all the big crowds come, quite often indeed, they ask me to share something. So, last year I got a nice preparation of a topic, which was this topic, because I thought, this is okay, I can share something useful on this. And then, of course, last year they had a different system, that whatever topic came up on the Morley, you had to share something on that. So this time she asked me, what topic would you like to share on? So, I like this topic, making Brahmin life natural, because it's something which for myself took some time to achieve, and I still feel it's work in progress. And also, those of you who know history, remember Bismarck, he made his famous quote that, what did he say? Fools learn from their own mistakes, and wise men learn from the mistakes of others. So, I can share with you some of my, we can't say mistakes, but if we were doing a retrospective reflection on would I have done it like this, knowing what I know now, or how could it, and the answer would be no, maybe I'll share some of those things. Which, okay, what does it mean to be natural? Just have a little think for a minute. Maya, can we have a second microphone in case we need it? Oh, it's better there. Okay, all right. If you speak loudly, I think, can everyone hear when you speak? Yeah. Anyway, we keep the microphone here in case we want to share anything. So keep that just kind of down the front. You can put it here. Okay. So what did you say? No effort. No effort. Yeah? You tell that to Daddy Janki? You don't want to make any effort? What do you mean when you say no effort? Okay. Doesn't require too much thinking. Mm. Okay. Good. Something that's natural is easy. Okay. Yeah. Relaxed. Yeah. Okay. Comes from the heart as opposed to the head. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because we can have a lot of theory, huh? Is it okay? You can hear clearly? Okay. You know, we hear a lot of theory, and every day in Baba's Morley we'll hear theory. And, you know, beautiful sharing some daddy when she's here, which I found just invaluable, you know, because when daddy's sharing, you feel as if one point strikes you and there's you've jumped 70 years, you know. Because when, you know the story with Daddy Jenki, she came about a year later. You know, she was in bondage, you know, she was married. You know that? She doesn't talk much about it. But, so she came to the yogya about a year later. And when she came, she felt as if she was miles behind. And she shared this many times. So what she did, I think, I've heard a different figure, but she read the Morley around 12 to 18 times a day. And, you know, to catch up. And it's interesting that ever since then, that's always been the same kind of story. You know, I remember Brother Jagdish, who's passed on now, when he came, I think, in the early 50s, he said to Mama, how can I catch up? You know, you're 15 years, 16 years ahead of me. How can we catch up? And again, her advice was, well, that's fine. People have been there from the beginning till now, but they haven't consistently practiced soul consciousness. And so if you really practice soul consciousness, then you can not just catch up, but go ahead. And those of you who knew Brother Jagdish, or you listened to some of his classes, I mean, even Sister Jenti said he's got like an intellect of like 10 people, you know, really very deep. And I can remember when we came, this is late 70s, we felt we were just miles away, you know. Daddy Jenki had been going 40 years, and we thought, how can we catch up? And I can then remember a meeting when I'd been in Gan about 10 years, and someone said, but I've only been in Gan 4 years. And then someone said, but I've only been in Gan 4 months. And someone said, I've only just finished the course. It's only 4 weeks. And so it's interesting, actually, this same thought comes. And, you know, those of you who are around Daddy Jenki, and we've kind of been brought up with her in England, which is a great fortune. But, you know, one of the things she just can't tolerate is excuses or reasons. So if you say, well, it was okay for you because, you know, you didn't work or you didn't have anything else to do, Daddy will go, forget it. Don't give me any excuses. If you want to do something, do it. And there's always been this argument with, even now I've heard Daddy say, anyone can come and become one of the Rosary of Victory. Even now. And of course, it's not a competition, but I have to have that thought that whatever is deep inside me, it needs to come out. I'm used to be quite a sportsman. I used to play a lot of sport before Baba came to Baba. And there's a great similarity between sport and spirituality, yeah? You agree, brothers? Any footballers here? Cricketers? A couple of years back, David Hemery, I don't know if some of you may remember him, he was the 400 meters hurdles gold medalist Olympics. This is going back in the late 60s. And he came here and to one of the dialogues, and so I was just helping to escort him, and we had some very interesting discussions. And one of the things I asked him when he was running, where was his attention? Was it on himself or was it on the others? Because if you're in a race, you have to keep an eye on the other people. And he said, no, if your attention goes on others, you can't win. Actually, it was an interesting expression he used. He said, you're running against your highest potential. And so as a sportsman, this is what he was doing. Identifying his highest potential and then checking to see which were the real factors which kind of prevented you reaching that and which were real things. Like, for instance, and when he was running, it was interesting, and I had to go for a little jog with him. And No, I said, you go slow. Because I used to be quite fit, but I hadn't done training for about 30 years. But when we were running, he said, he used to run, and then the body will say, oh, no, it's too much, stop, I'm tired. And as a sportsman, and you know, as a top professional, he learned to slowly identify which was real. In other words, are you going to damage yourself if you push yourself through a barrier, or is it just that you can stretch the limits? Anyway, that's a slightly different topic, but this idea that I'm only running against my highest potential is very beautiful. And the other thing which for me is very interested, connected to this kind of topic, he, like a small number of sports coaches, because he's now a coach as well in business, works on the principle that whatever we need to kind of develop into, it's already there. But it simply just needs to be brought out and kind of developed. And I find that really kind of interesting. Funnily enough, where I am up in the north of England, there's a handful of people who are professional sports coaches, football coach and professional tennis coach, interestingly. They bring some of their young prodigies along for positive thinking, which is interesting. But when I've spoken to them, this is something where I see a great similarity between meditation, spirituality, and sport. Because I know when I was a kid, anyone been taught to swim when they were a kid? Yeah. I had 10 lessons on, was it the breaststroke? And then once I just saw these young lads from the other end of the swimming pool run out the changing rooms, dive in the water, and they're, you know, crawling along. And I thought, oh, that looks good. And I just said, I was off, you see. So what I learned from that was breaststroke really wasn't my natural style. It was like, you know, you've got to do this. But this other style was quite natural. And so I just looked and I just did it. And, you know, I've known people who... I used to have a friend who used to play golf, and he had, in a coach's eye, an atrocious swing. I don't know any of you play golf, but, you know, you're supposed to stand in a certain way. And when they have lessons, you know, you stand like this and you stand like this and keep your head forward, keep your head down, look around here and look like this. And then you're supposed to hit the ball. And it's like... For me, it felt very cramped. And this guy, I mean, his swing was awful. It was all over the place. But he used to just whack it straight down the middle every time. Yeah, can you see where we're going? It's like he had some intrinsic natural ability, and he just did it. And what happens, certainly in sport, you know, people get cramped. So... You know, they have a natural ability, and somehow the kind of the structure, you know, you have to stand like this, do it like this, do it like this. It doesn't allow them to cultivate their natural ability. And I think in Baba's knowledge, this is really important. You know, there was another tennis coach in America, I think. He used to just get kids and say, hit the ball. He didn't show them how to hit the ball, he said, just hit the ball. And he just basically trained them to hit the ball till it became really natural. And then he'd put the net in front of them. And he would say, forget about the net, just keep hitting the ball. So their attention was on hitting the ball and not, I mustn't hit the ball into the net. And then at some point, I presume, you know, hit the ball kind of in that direction, over the net, into that little bit there, but just hit the ball. And that's how he trained people. I think, I can't remember, there's the guy who wrote a book, it's called The Inner Game. Some of you business professional people know things like that, but it's all to do with what goes on inside. It's all to do with our mental positioning. And funnily enough, David Hemery, the sports guy, because he was intelligent guy and he was a PhD in education, he actually wrote a book called, I think it was called In Search of Excellence, and he interviewed 20 or so top sports professionals who'd really reached their peak to see if he could find out what was a common thing and how they succeeded. And basically, it's an interesting book, but basically it was to do with the power of the mind. Because I asked him, did you think you were the fastest and the best 400 meters hurdler? And he said, according to the timings and the statistics and the ratings and all this stuff, technically he shouldn't have won. But inside he felt he could win, and he won. Now, interesting enough, 4 years later he was in the final, and he couldn't have been that old, he must have been about 26 then. But he said he created this subtle thought that maybe I'm 4 years older. You know, you can see the analogy between Manmat and Parmat and Srimat. He had this thought that maybe I just have to prepare myself that if I don't win. And he came third. And actually he told me I could have won, but there was something inside that wasn't able to kind of go for it, you know? And I really like that, because it really ties in with a lot of what Baba says, and particularly our great superhero, Daddy Janki. You know, she's always telling us, you know, just go for it. And in relationship to becoming part of the Rosary of Victory, I can remember many years, Daddy just said, all you need is the thought that I'm part of that Rosary. That it has to be the right thought in the right context, because I don't know if any of you were there, but many years ago when all the foreigners were meeting Baba, and we were always very bold, and it must have been quite a while ago, because Brother Niver was translating for us in those days, and that's very sweet. yeah, Brother Niver used to translate when we were meeting Baba and Shiluben, you know, and I think it was in the meditation hall. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But, and there was, I don't know, it was a couple of hundred of us then, which seemed like a big group in those days. And Baba said, okay, hands up, those of you who think you're part of the 108. All the hands shot up. It was double forms. And of course, and it was so funny. Baba actually smiled, because there was more than 108 there. And it was very, no, but it was very interesting what Baba said. Baba said, okay, so we'll have to add on another, I don't know what you call it, like a, you know, like a the rose, a string to the rosary. And actually, it was very interesting. I mean, this is another story, but this whole thing about, you know, when Baba uses the word 108, does he actually mean absolutely 108? Of course, the reality is, in terms of the cycle, that figure is, those bhakti figures are there because of, you know, what Baba used this time. And then when Baba comes at the confluence age, he has to use the images that they were familiar with, and so he continues to speak about those same figures. And so, but, you know, do you think 108 means 108 and that's it? Even when we came, we used to count up the Daddy Janki, the Daddy Kongas. And in those days, maybe there wasn't 108, so we used to think, yeah, we've got a chance. Now, for some of you guys who are coming quite new, they think, oh, you know, there's Charlie, he's been on it. And of course, actually, it's not really about that. It's not about if there's 108 and after that I don't become part, because it's not actually about the figure. Actually, you know, one Molly must have been a revised FYAC. Baba said actually that the beauty of the rosary is that each bead is close to the next bead. So it's not about a competition, but it's about really coming close to that next bead. And so it doesn't, to me, this is the difference between like theory and something which is practical. You know, at the moment, I mean, in the old Sakar Mollies, Baba's very clear, when karmatit means, you know, all your accounts are cleared, then you leave the body. And that's what they used to believe. And in the Morley Baba generally says that. But nowadays there's this little discussion going on. You know, is it possible to still be in the body and being as close as being Karmateet? I mean, you look at Daddy Kamalka. You know, Daddy Janki, you never quite know with her, do you? And so, you know, one is the theory that, okay, you're Karmateet, so you leave the body. But the other is, maybe I can be as close as doesn't matter. And for me, that's a practical thing. And so it's, for me, it's very, very important that you catch Baba's knowledge and Baba's teachings and Baba's lifestyle, everything about a Brahmin life, in a way that you can work with, that works for you within the framework. Because the framework is there to make things easy and natural. It's not there to, you know, give us a headache. And so, you know, if I come to Baba and, you know, it's like, so you come to the center and I want to learn meditation to be peaceful and happy. So you learn, this is the knowledge, and then what you've got to do, you've got to get up at 4 o'clock, and you can't eat this, and you can't do that, and you can't do the other. And, you know, all the things in a Brahmin life. Now, it can sometimes feel a little bit like a straitjacket. I mean, I don't know who. It's like your daddy's not here, so you can. Who feels sometimes it feels like a little bit of a restriction? Yeah, no, be honest. Some think no. You want to share anything? No. I remember there was one Borg message, and it was a bird in a cage, and the bars of the cage just went up and up and up all the way to the soul world. And you can have things like that in the subtle regions. And it was actually Baba's comment that some children feel that Srimad and the Mariadas and the whole things are like a restriction. But Baba actually said it's your protection that actually allows you to go up. And the other interesting thing, once, I don't know if any of you were there, but this was a very interesting scene when Baba, Avyakt Babdada, kind of did an interactive workshop with the double foreigners. Because, you know, in those days, after the main Morley, we would meet, we just meet in groups like this. Actually, in those days, you know, you'd meet as like Tel Aviv or Israel. Not just here. We met as a center, you know, Leeds, up in the north of England, we met as a center. After Baba done the Morley and met all the big groups in the countries, and met, that was, so that used to go on in those days. And maybe, I can't remember the number, but Baba actually said, who created the Mariadas? You know, the Mariadas, the codes of conduct, the principles. And I won't go into all the details, but basically Baba kept questions and answer, and it was really like the kind of seminars and kind of facilitation process we kind of think is, you know, modern way of giving Gyan. But basically Baba brought us to the point where he was saying, you did. Very, very interesting. And for me, this is where it's like something that is coming, seemingly is coming from outside, is kind of reaching over and meeting something which is coming from the inside. And for me, the whole challenge or the whole thing about Brahmin life is I have to bring those together so that it feels really natural to me. And it does vary. I mean, you're saying, no, it feels natural in someone. And I felt very, when I came, I felt very aligned to everything. But I have to make sure that I'm working with the ideas in a way that makes me feel comfortable. Because I think this is like a touchstone. I mean, say for instance, what would be the sign of being physically natural in terms of your posture? You feel comfortable, yeah? And if your posture isn't natural, what's going to happen? Open. Oh, okay, natural. But if your posture is not right, you're closed, okay? Physically? Yeah. Basically, your body tells you that you're not sitting in the right posture, and so the body is kind of clever and it creates a pain. And so it's good to hear the message rather than just take the aspirin to take the pain away. I mean, you might want to take the aspirin to take the pain away, but there's a message in that which is basically saying that you're not in the right position, and if you stay in this position, you might damage me. So I'm kind of sending you a message which is saying you need to adjust. Yeah? It's common sense. You know, you're walking along and you feel a pain in your foot. What do you do? You stop, huh? You know, maybe a thorn's gone through your shoe or a nail or something. If you carry on walking, what's going to happen? You know, you're going to damage yourself, maybe to the point where you can't use your foot. I mean, that's what the pain mechanism in the body is. You know, if you put your hand in a fire and it didn't hurt, you know, no hand. So it's actually quite painful, but that pain is actually useful. So in the same way I feel, I mean, I'm showing my own experience here because I'm not into classes as like, if something is natural, it will feel easy for me and there won't be any kind of spiritual pain as a Brahmin. And I hope, you know, those of you who knew, maybe you're still in your honeymoon period with Baba and, you know, with good wishes and pure feelings, and I do hope that it stays like that. However, if we're really being honest, it's not really possible to stay, you know, all the time until I've actually worked out how to be natural in a very natural way. And that's not mean to say that I have to think I'm going to fluctuate, but I have to have the right relationship with the pain. And I'm not saying that because I used to be a dentist. I'm just reminded now because my dentist friend is here. Because for me, you know, being natural basically means soul consciousness, doesn't it? But something that I was churning is, you know, I can be thinking about soul consciousness from a mental attitude of body consciousness. Something which is, I don't know, I just call it body conscious, soul consciousness. And then you've got the other side of that is soul conscious, body consciousness. Soul conscious, body consciousness. It means, in essence, soul consciousness, as far as I mean, how I work with it in a practical way, I mean, you get all the points on the Morley and Daddy and stuff like that, but practically, it's like, it's the right relationship between things. This is my understanding of soul consciousness. So I have to have the right relationship with myself. I have to have the right relationship with my inverted commas, my positive qualities. I need to have the right relationship with my inverted commas, weaknesses, and we might want to look at that. I have to have the right relationship with the body and, you know, the people around me at work and my friends and my family and all that kind of stuff, yeah? And to me, that's what's, in essence, what soul consciousness is. And, you know, you have to do your own work on that. because, okay, in essence, What are the main qualities of the soul? Between 5 and 7, depend on which class you go to and which PK book you read, but it's okay, it doesn't. Five or seven main qualities of the soul. Yes? Peace. Love. Happiness, sublime, yep. Yeah. Purity. Knowledge, so yeah, knowledge, wisdom, understanding, yeah. Love, yeah. Easiness, yeah. So like lightness, yeah. Anything else? So peace, power, yeah, strength. So, you know, depending on which book you read, it could be power, it could be strength, those kind of things. Okay. So if I'm having the right relationship with myself, I will be in the experience of those qualities. I mean, this is how I check soul consciousness. So peace, love, happiness, purity, wisdom, understanding, knowledge, strength, joy, happy. Yeah, so a different word, happiness, joy, bliss. Sometimes actually bliss is a different quality to happiness, but you have to ask Daddy Janky the difference on that. And again, I've also heard those qualities referred to as like primary colours. So it's kind of a nice, you know, like primary colours, so you mix red and yellow and you get orange, that's it. So it's a very nice way of churning. So all those main qualities, if you mix and match the different 5-7 qualities, you get all the different shades, which are like the virtues. You know, like you, when you want to paint the center, you get all the color charts and you get all the different shades, yeah? And you spend days discussing it, and it always usually comes out cream or magnolia or something like that. Anyway, that's another story. So you've got all these different shades, and basically those different colors are usually a tiny percentage difference of one color or another. And you get all the different colours. So it's a nice way to churn, actually. So maybe a certain percentage of peace and power becomes, what quality would that be? A powerful peace could be cooperation, yeah? Courage, yeah? Determination, like patience, yeah? And say happiness and wisdom, optimism. Anyway, that's another session. Brother Ken's very good at that. He does a workshop on that. But it's a nice thing to churn. You know, which is the origin of the virtues? So basically, you can actually see what is the origin of the different virtues. But my main point is that those are the 6 or 7 main qualities of the soul. So if I'm truly soul conscious, I should be in the experience of those 7 main qualities, or the virtues or the qualities that come from that. And so if I come to Baba, I'm going to become peaceful if it kills me. And in my collection of sort of funny cartoons when we're doing talks, there's this wonderful cartoon I've got, and there's this lady sitting in a traffic jam, and she's thumping the dashboard of the car saying, "Oh God, I'm late for my relaxation class." And you know, have you had that experience when it's like, you know, you have meditation and someone comes in and you go, "Be quiet, I'm meditating." Now, okay, I'm sure you've done it, but there's something that's, well, I've done it. Okay, sorry, I've done it. I'm sharing my own experience. It's like the desire to become peaceful, the desire to actually do what Baba says, is so strong, and yet what's coming out the other side is impatience, is frustration, and, you know, it's like, I mean, now it's kind of impossible, but I always used to like to sit right at the front. So if I wasn't 3 feet from Daddy, I'd feel I was miles away. So everyone, I must get there first, must get there first. So actually, the desire was not that you want to be in front of everyone else, but actually I used to like sitting close. Even Daddy used to, actually. We hear she used to sit right in front of Baba. It's not an ego thing, but when you're close, and that's why she likes to come. It feels different. As well as the gyan, you're catching the vibration and the energy and the drishti, and it feels different. But it's like, I can remember in those early days, sometimes I'd be so kind of anxious to sit near the front that you'd get actually peaceless. So there's something that's not right there. You understand what I'm saying? And you have to check this for yourself. Now, that's my understanding of body conscious, soul consciousness. It means I'm thinking in soul consciousness, but my mindset isn't completely soul conscious. So what comes out the other side is not the main qualities of the soul and all the different qualities that go with that, but it's something like a bit of stress or impatience or anxious. Yeah? Now that's in a sense a story for another day, but it's something that, just to point out to you, you need to be able to spot that, because that for me is the spiritual pain, which is the same as, you know, the nail through your foot, or you put your hand on something hot and you go, ooh, that hurts. It means that the motive might be right. You know, I just want to be near the front, or I don't want to be late for class because actually I don't want to miss anything. But if I'm using this kind of, I'm thinking about knowledge, but in this subtle body conscious way, I'll be fearful. So I'll think, well, what's Daddy going to think if I come in late? And, well, man, she does that anyway. But the medicine. Yeah, what is the medicine for this? Then, yes, you can tell me. That'll be nice. Okay, we come back to that. Is that clear? Am I clear? Again, it's just something that you need to check. You know, I can remember when we came and Daddy said, you know, there's certain things that just stay in your memory, and we were quite young, and you know, Daddy said people come here to hear to experience the joy of what it means to be a Brahmin. You know, they come here to experience the joy of a life that's based on knowledge. And again, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, because it's quite some time since I came to Baba, and you know, you go through various stages, and one of those stages, you start off with that amazing enthusiasm, which is possibly not quite balanced. So it's very good, but it needs balancing. And for me, that's also another sign of being natural. It should be balanced. Then you start doing service, which you think, that's good, I'm useful for God. And then you get so absorbed in service that you think, oh, God. You know, and then you're going to work and looking after centres and doing service, and you think, it's, and then people are coming and you're telling them about this wonderful knowledge. And they say, but don't you get tired getting up early? And we go, no, not at all. Actually, when you practice this knowledge, you have less waste thoughts, therefore you save a lot of energy. So whereas before you needed 10 hours sleep, you can manage quite easily with 5 or 6. Or, I mean, not all the time. I hope Daddy doesn't hear this class. You know, so you do go through, well, I did. I don't know. I think if most Brahmins are kind of, I don't know many Brahmins, maybe Daddy. Daddy's a bit of an exception, really. No, actually, it's different. Even she shared when she was a bit. On the odd occasion, she shares in a class. You know, and then you start thinking, you start having the same. I started having the same thoughts in Gyan as I had before I came to Baba, which was, there I was, you know, happily married, nice job, professional couple, nice house, everything's fine, and you think, is this it? You know, you get up, have your breakfast, go to work, come home, do a bit of this, that, and the other. Go to bed, get up, go to work, come home, do a bit of this and that, go on holiday, come home, go to work again. And you think, is this it? And that's when you start looking for something which is more than that, which is Baba. And then you come to Baba. And after a while, you start doing all that and you think, I'm getting up now, midfield, and go to Morley, then I've got to dash off to work, then I've got to come out and give students, and then I go run down to London at the weekend because Daddy's called a meeting, and then you come back, and then you go to Madam, and then you come back, and then at some point, not for everyone, but usually at some point in your problem, I think, is this it? And I think I was probably a little bit in that stage a couple of years ago. You know, I'd worked 30 years as a kids dentist, and I'm looking after the centre, and I'd kind of reached that point where I was thinking, I'm not sure at this point if I need to be doing this, but I felt a bit trapped, actually. And that's when a very old Brahmin friend of mine, after so many years in knowledge, he came up one weekend, was doing a talk, and he sort of rolls back on the couch and says, "David, have you ever thought about what you want to do with your Brahmin life?" And I was floored, actually. You know, this is after nearly 25 years in those days. And I thought, well, that's a very strange thing to ask someone who's been with Baba so long. And he was picking up on something that actually, that kind of what I call beautiful feeling of intoxication somehow had got lost in the system. And, you know, those of you who are in management and those of you who work in organizations, and I did a little bit of that in the health trust, you know, it's always them, the managers, or the system that's at fault, and it's never nothing to do with you. And I used to do a bit on the personal development program in the health trust, and I'd say, well, when you say they, you know, who do you mean? You know, which manager? Be specific. But as a general thing, we generalize, don't we? And so we think, but you know, it's just the system, because I've got to do this, and I've got to do that, and I've got to do the other, and Daddy says I've got to do this, and the person in the center says we've got to do this and that and the other, and suddenly you feel, or you can feel a little bit trapped. Now, if some of you have never felt trapped, great, and I hope you don't. But I'm just sharing really the things that I've kind of gone through, and kind of seeing how you come out of that. And how you come out of that for me is I have to reinvent myself. And for those of you who are still inventing yourself, it's fine. But, you know, we need to keep renewing ourselves each day. It's like the pain's coming, maybe because it's not natural, but we're not sure why it's coming. Is that? Use the mic, because it's there.
It's just like you were talking about in the physical, you can recognize a pain, and sometimes you can go further and know what is causing the pain, or going to the doctor. In the spiritual, it's more subtle and invisible and sometimes untouchable, and you don't know exactly how it feels. You know or recognize some memory that you know something better and feel better, and you are not touching that. And that pain is giving you a signal, but you are not yet there in that experience. And that's what I feel is between the knowing and becoming that again. And that's only when you start feeling the natural of yourself.
You know, going back to this thing about getting upset about being late for your relaxation class. It's very important when I notice something that's not right that I then don't get upset by the fact that it's not right. I mean, those of you, anyone here, you know, from a health background, you know about an allergic reaction. Yeah? So something comes in the body which is foreign to the body, which is, in this context, unnatural. And the body's defense mechanisms attacks that to remove that which is unnatural from the body. And that's normal, but in an allergic reaction, the reaction to the thing which is not natural in the body creates more harm for the body than the actual thing itself. Now, that's another thing really to be aware of in your Brahmin life. So maybe you notice something's not going 100%, but then if I think, oh my God, you know, I'm supposed to be happy and I'm not feeling it, then you actually, it's like an allergic reaction, and it's very damaging. And I have to find some way through that. I know for myself, I did have the natural tendency to be happy, but I also had the other side, which was it's called low moods. I think in the Brahmin family we call it low moods. Normally it's called depression, but low moods, yeah, so sounds nicer, huh? I didn't know I had it when I was a kid because it wasn't labeled, but it was just, I used to get a bit mopey and lethargic. So you kind of go through those things. Now, when we come to Baba, you know, the opposite of being realized and firing on all cylinders is that I'm a little bit not, I'm a bit down. And so, you know, whether you call it Brahmin depression, there's clinical depression. That's probably what I had as well. But you know, Brahmin depression, subtle, this kind of feeling I should be here. You know, everyone else in Madhaban so happy and bouncy, and I'm the only one who's not feeling so good, or I'm the only one who has Maya, or I'm the only one who... And of course the reality is that's not the reality. Everyone does. It's just that some people are better at disguising it than others. I mean, for some people it shows on their face, and some people it just it goes inside. But it's really important not to react to that negativity, because if I react to it, it becomes like a Brahmin allergic reaction. And it's like, you know, Maya always works, as far as I can see, particularly in two ways. Either it creates fear, or it creates confusion. And again, you know, maybe you can just check this yourself. Like something comes and this question, why has this come? You know, I've been completely pure in this life, and I've come to Baba, and Baba says we should have the vision of brother and sister, and suddenly, you know, like in the Morley, Baba says the Baba's Morley makes the old men young again. You know, or I've heard what, you know, one of the, actually it was Sister Gentian, she's very honest with you. She never got angry before she came to Baba. And when you come to Baba, suddenly something emerges. Now, if I don't really understand deeply what's happening, I think, my God, I'm worse than I was before. So someone comes to Baba, you know, nice family, nice kids, nice wife, good business, and you know, after 6 months, divorced, kids have left, run away, business has gone into bankruptcy. I mean, what happened? And you think, what's happened here? And you think, hang on a minute. And of course, the thing is that's gonna happen anyway. Yeah, that's another story. We won't go into that because there isn't time. You know, we've been through the whole cycle. And one thing that I find very, very useful, and this isn't weak thought or negative thought, but it's like we're coming back from body consciousness back to soul consciousness. And in the context of, you know, being natural, soul consciousness clearly is our natural state, isn't it? And we know we were soul conscious for half the cycle and all the stuff Babas talks about in the Morley. But for half the cycle, I have been body conscious. Whether I like it or not, that's the reality. And so, you know, suddenly I'm belting down the motorway at 150 miles an hour for half the cycle, and we come to Baba, and Baba goes, child, actually, you need to be soul conscious. And so it's like, you know, full brakes on her. Ooh, and about turn, and then what I actually have to do, and again, those of you who haven't had this experience, maybe you won't, it's fine, maybe you're the collective yoga of the family will take you through this without having to go through everything, but my experience is you've got to drive back up the motorway and you've got to go past all the oncoming traffic, which is actually all the negative karma you've been doing for the last half a cycle. And I'm actually smiling because I tell people back home that if you come from Delhi to Jaipur, or now from, well, about halfway from Ahmedabad, you know, there's actually a dual carriageway, and it's lovely. It takes about an hour off the journey, and it's probably about the nearest thing I've seen to a proper road in India, you know, and you can... we were going down to Ahmedabad in Baba's car to to help receive the guests for peace of mind. And I said to the brother, I said, isn't that a lorry that's coming down? And he said, yes. I said, well, shouldn't it be on the other side of the dual carriageway? And I mean, it's a nice road to drive fast, but I said, do you normally have cows, you know, on the dual carriageway? Of course, those of you who, have you heard, there's this very famous song in India. I don't know. Joshi, you must know. It can only happen in India. Yeah, it's a very famous, quite a funny song. Anyway, that can only happen in India when you see the cars coming the other way on the dual carriageway. But it feels a little bit like that. But basically, we do a full stop, we do an about turn, and we have to travel back through everything that we've done. Maybe not consciously, but everything that's there is going to come up. Okay, some of it's just going to go through yoga, but a lot of it is going to come up in our thoughts and feelings. And so I've never really been an angry person, suddenly I'm getting angry. I've never really been very impatient, and suddenly, you know, if the Borg's not there, I've had this experience. I'm not really angry. I used to be impatient, and suddenly you find yourself exploding. Now maybe it's a very gross thing where everyone sees it, or maybe it's something which goes inside, and that's usually the kind of the suppression, depression, repression kind of mode. And some Brahmins tend to be over that side, and the others are, you know, tend to express it. Sister Jenty gave a lovely sharing on this the other day, and she said, actually, neither should we suppress or express, because if I suppress, it's not good, and if I keep expressing, it just keeps getting reinforced, and so the bit in the middle is I need to transform it. Right, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. Yeah, basically, everything that is in there has to come up and out. We don't have to open the dustbin and pour all our sanskars out, but basically they're there and they're going to come up and out. And if and when they do, it's okay. This is my experience. It's kind of okay. It's the stuff that's coming out to show you that you're actually changing. And it's coming out to show you that I don't need to buy into it. Yeah? Can you follow me? Is it clear? Because I think this is quite subtle. You know, I believe my natural state is peace, is love, is happiness, all the kind of things that Baba tells us that we're supposed to be. And Daddy's always nattering on about this, isn't she? And she seems to be in it all the time. But if I'm being very honest, I wasn't always in that space all the time, even though I know it was natural. And when I used to meet Baba, and, you know, going back many years ago, I was in a kind of a down mood. And I'd meet Baba, and Baba, when we used to have those personal meetings, Baba will say, you're the one who is constantly happy. Really? You know, I mean, this is 25, 26 years ago. And I'm thinking, gosh, okay, yeah. And then Baba say, you dance in happiness. And there was one occasion where, you know, in one of those crazy situations, and the Madhaban, David, you should dance. Okay. So I just did a little bit in front of Baba. And of course then everyone said, oh, you danced in front of Baba. You were happy. And every year, for about 3 or 4 years, Baba would ask me, you are the one who's constantly happy, aren't you? And actually, if I'm being very honest, it was actually a strange thing, because deep inside I knew I was. I even now I feel quite light. I mean, I work with kids, but I feel quite light, but quite often it isn't always manifesting because of all this backlog of stuff that's in the soul. And actually, if I'm being honest, when you're in that state where there's a kind of a discrepancy between what you know you are and what you know Baba wants you to be, and actually what you're feeling, it's a bit painful, actually, as a Brahmin. But it's kind of okay. It's part of the process. And I think it's really good just to accept that. And then after about, I think, 3 or 4 meetings, this, and Baba, it was really weird because sometimes Baba would carry on next year where he left off. You know, I've got a record of all the things Baba said to me. And then 1 year, I think Baba said, now you have become the one who's ever happened. I thought, oh, thank God. And then Baba said, and now it should be constant. So, you know, he... And actually, you know, when I look back at that and I look at the vision that Daddy Janki had for me and the vision that she has for us all, you know, she sees right past where we are, where we come from, and she just sees this. And it's, she's not just saying it, or Daddy doesn't waste her words. She really is seeing that in all of us. And I know that, you know, this is where they're seeing us, and actually this is what I am, this is my natural state. But practically there's a discrepancy, and somehow, you know, the challenge is to kind of go on that journey and still be in the experience of those 7 qualities of the soul, or be moving towards those, and not to allow the stuff that comes up to kind of stop me experiencing what I'm supposed to experience. Yeah. Am I clear? Is it making sense? Okay. So I guess in essence what I'm saying is a lot of stuff will come up and it's okay. But I do need to check to see whether there's anything that I'm doing that might be useful to change, to minimize that. You know, because I once said to Daddy, Daddy, you know, having... all these thoughts are coming, and dreams, and your Daddy speaks to us like Baba used to speak to her. So she would say, no yoga. Lack of yoga. Some of you here last night, you know, so Daddy's boiling the water, and a little drop goes on, Baba will say, no yoga, lack of yoga. So I have to check to see whether it's like my own carelessness, or whether I'm not paying attention to all the things that Baba's giving us the guidelines to do, or whether really it is something that's just coming out to show its face, to check to see whether I buy into Maya's game, which is confusion and fear. Yeah? Because that's how Maya works. Why has this come? How is it possible? You know, I've been in Gan a whole week, or a month, or a year, or 10 years, or whatever it is, and I've never experienced this before. And I hear this from my old Brahmin friends. You know, they say, David, I've never got angry before. Now I'm huffing and puffing, and every time the person at the center says, do this, and I've never experienced this. What's happening, you know? And actually, I just need to understand that's okay. It's really okay. But what I need to learn is I just need to learn to transform that so that I'm not expressing it and I'm not suppressing it. And only you can do that. You know, you have to do it in a way that's comfortable for you. And those of you who do the, you know, the sport, or the jiu-jitsu, you know, the guy's coming at you and you just sort of... Whoosh. So don't get confused, and also don't have fear. You know, because it's like I'm feeling happy, but then I'm fearful that I may not stay happy all the time. You know, it's like in the mall the other day, Baba was saying, you know, someone's got a lot of money, but then when they've got money, they're scared in case someone steals the money, so they start having fear. So it doesn't make sense. If I'm happy, just go with it. But don't have that fear, because that's the second mechanism that Maya works by. She'll create fear. And, you know, in my case, I didn't realize until after I came to Baba that I was suffering. I used to get depressed when I was a kid. And when I came to Baba, because of the cocktail of not being as mature as one could be, not sleeping as much as one needed, not eating in a balanced kind of way, and doing, you know, kind of burning the Brahmin candle at both ends. So with all those factors, you know, I dipped into a little bit of low feelings. Which was okay. It was a good experience when I look back. But, you know, one of the things about that is that it, those kind of things are usually cyclic. So they come back. And those of you, you know, who actually work with mental illness or have had some, and that's usually quite a number. Like in England, it's 4 out of 10 and rising. So in a couple of years' time, the WHO reckons that, you know, mental health is going to be the biggest issue for killing, even over with heart disease. So it's a big issue. And of course, you know, we're a cross-section of society, aren't we? So it has to be, okay, three, four out of 10 Brahmins have either worked with it or going to have some kind of stuff, yeah? So it's not a deal, you know? I mean, we're all mentally ill, aren't we? Yeah, we're all. I mean, if you think about it, our natural state is purity. Our natural state is love. Our natural state is... And, you know, we're dipping in and out of all these negative stuff and weaknesses, all the stuff Baba Natter's on about and Daddy. So what's that? It's disease, isn't it? Whatever you want to call it. It may not be according to the world mental illness, but we're not in our natural state, so we're ill. And it's up here, so it's mental illness. It's Brahmin mental illness. But I don't need to have any fear about those things, because they will come back. Because that's the nature of sanskars. You know, it's mind, intellect, action, sanskars, and back into my thoughts. It's, you know, it's basic gyan. It's like the first or second lesson. And so, you know, I never had these thoughts since 5 years. You know, when I came to Baba, these are the kind of thoughts I had, but now I've been to Madhavan every year, and all those thoughts have gone, and suddenly those same thought patterns are coming back, and what's happened, what's wrong, and it's terrible, and maybe I'm not a very good Brahmin, and maybe I won't have the power. It's okay, because that's the nature of how the soul works. The difference is, you have changed. And, you know, another very subtle aspect of soul consciousness is to have the right relationship with the mind, intellect, and sanskars. And that's probably something else for you to churn, or a topic for another day. It's interesting. I don't know if they've translated it, but even before Brahma Baba, you know, Shiv Baba started entering, Brahma Baba's diaries, he wasn't Brahma Baba then, but he had a series of diaries. Mauladada in London, Sister Genty's father, has a copy of that in Sindhi or Hindi. And very lovely stories of how Baba would hold court with his mind, intellect, and sanskars each day. This is before he came to Baba, or before Baba. No, he didn't come to Baba, did he? Baba came to him. but, you know, this idea of the king, or the chief minister, speaking to see that his three ministers were in order. And so, again, a very subtle aspect that, you know, just like we say, I'm not my mind, not my body. You know, my mind, my intellect, my sanskars. Yes, we use it as a kind of like a descriptive term, but in a sense, really in soul consciousness, my natural state is just silence. In the soul world, the faculties of the soul are just simply potential. They're not functioning, and so in the soul world, I mean, it's not that I don't have a mind or don't have an intellect, but it's not activated. And, you know, the whole story of Baba's knowledge, why every day Baba keeps kind of Baba doesn't hammer, but Daddy Janki hammers. You know, and it's so beautiful to see. I mean, look at Daddy, bless her. She's nearly 90. And this morning she gets, you know, she can't understand why we don't get as excited about the Morley. She doesn't. You know, really, I mean, you know, she really, just to observe her, it's amazing. I mean, she tires us out. Couple of months ago, we had this program going on. And I said to Sister Moore in London, "said, is it possible maybe we could just pinch a couple of hands from London?" She said, "David, Daddy's been here for a month." And the thing is, Daddy just—I think I've heard possibly her next book could be, you know, where do you get your energy from? Because this is a thing that people are asking her, not just Brahmins. I mean, we know where she gets her energy from, but all the souls outside. It is amazing, actually. So I mean, for me, it's a lesson to actually see. But, you know, how she reinvents herself. And, you know, for me, this is a whole area for you to, you know, to explore for yourself. How I reinvent myself as a Brahmin. Not once a year when I come to Madhavan or I come to London or whatever. But each day, so that everything feels new. Because, I was just thinking before, you know, newness is a sign of it being natural. You know, young children don't get bored. You know, I worked with young children. Those of you who, you know, have kids, you know, like my nurse who worked with me for 20 years, she said, "David, she wore out Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs." You know, the kids watching, and half an hour later, she goes, "Again, Mummy." So you play the same film. She said, "David, I know exactly every single movement, word." She said, "Again, Mummy." You know, so like a young child, they'll watch the same thing again and again and again. And each time, it's new. Now, for me, I don't know whether it's the right understanding, but this is how I, like with a cycle, you know, the same thing, what's the point? But even as a Brahmin, Baba says the cycle repeats identically. But I like to think, okay, yes, the cycle is identical, but for me it feels like it's a new cycle. It just happens to be identically to the last cycle. But it's a new cycle. I mean, I don't know whether that's the right, but for me that feels kind of fresh. So I'm doing, everything's new. It just happens to be the same as what we did before, which we don't know anyway. And to me, that's the difference between, like, Brahmin theory and practice. So, you know, you get the Brahmin pundit who's, "What do you mean it's new, David? Everything is repeating identically, so nothing is new." But it's the context, isn't it? You know, and coming back to what I was just trying to show at the very beginning, it's the context. So if, like in the context of that knowledge, I'm thinking, there's nothing new in the cycle, there's nothing new, everything's the same, I've done the same thing before, where am I going to end up? You know, a bored Brahmin. And that's the context is wrong. You know, why does Baba say nothing is new? When do I use that, the knowledge of it's nothing new? When it's difficult, yeah? It's like someone comes to you at the center and you ask them to do something, and this happened to me. They say, "Can you do this?" And they go, you go, "Oh, sister, never done that before, so that would be difficult for me to do it before." You know what they tell me? Well, yeah, that's the theory. Nothing new. They said, "Brother, if you do it this time, then you do it next time, then you'll have done it before." then you won't be able to say to me that I haven't done it before. So the solution to not having done something before is to do it. When I used to speak to my friend in London who, you know, well, you'll know who he is, but I won't mention his name. All you get out of him, I said, Mike, I've never done a seminar before. You know, I don't have any professional training in this. I've never been, everything I've learned is, David, just
do it.
Yes, but how do, just
do it.
But how do you do it? Just
do it.
And you go to Daddy and say, Daddy, you know, I'm going to, just
do it.
Oh, yeah, but how do you do it? Just
do it.
So when you do it, you've done it. Then it's not new. And anyway, that's another story. So you can't give that excuse. So if anyone comes to you and says, I've never done this before, then they'll say, sister or brother or John, here's your big chance. And Baba will help. So yes, when you haven't done something before, then you can. And that was my experience, because we mostly the brothers would go to Brother Niver, and the sisters used to go to Sister Shilu in the early days, and we'd say, this is going on, and I'm having this mire, and this mire, and this mire, and this mire. And then it was very sweet, and then he'd listen, and then I'd say, now I'll just give you drishti. So we used to just... That was very, very sweet. And and once I used to complain that actually I don't have any training for service, and you know, those of you know, Sister Maureen used to be in Leeds until she went to London, and she used to do all the service, and I used to kind of hide under the table and pretend there's nothing for me to do. And then once she went up to Edinburgh for 6 months, and there was all this programs that have been arranged, talks and things, and I said, well, we have to cancel them. We were quite... And she said, cancel them? I said, well, who's going to do them if you're not here? Anyway, that was another story. That's how I got blooded on the field of service. And anyway, I was sharing that kind of experience with Brother Niver in confidence. And I said to him, you know, every time I have to do service, I get so nervous. It's horrible. And I just... And actually, inside I want to do it, but it's like these old sanskaras of being nervous come. And you know, this is the thing, that it's like those sanskaras, almost like they're hardwired into the brain. You know, and if you ever have a conversation with Brother Neville in London, we've talked about this, it's very interesting. You know, like, you put a computer program and you transfer it to the computer, even when the gadget's disconnected, it almost feels as if it's still in the computer. And so, even though I have something to share, I feel it's useful. And I'm not nervous, and yet it's almost like something's hardwired, and you start feeling nervous, even when you're not nervous. Does that make sense? And this is the power of the power of the pattern of thinking. So I just need to be aware of that. Anyway, going back to this story, when we'd finished all the meetings and we were just like sitting around like here and Baba was talking, Niverbai, bless him, called me, sort of grabbed hold of me and plonked me in front of Baba and whispered in Baba's ear and basically told Baba what I told him. Which actually, looking back, was kind of sweet. And it was actually very sweet. Baba actually said, nothing new, everything is already done, whatever is done, you simply have to repeat, you know, you don't have to do anything new. So that was kind of sweet. Anyway, that's just a different context. So basically, if I use the word nothing new in the wrong context, I get bored. In the context of newness, I have to feel that everything is new and everything is fresh. And that really, for me, is like reinventing this state of being natural. And the key for that for me, or one of the keys, is a sense of maturity. And, you know, we've made so many, well, not mistakes, but, you know, things that you wouldn't do like that if you got the chance to do them again. And, like, my classic was, we had, we met the BKs on Monday, had two lessons, went to morning class on Thursday, lesson on Friday. Then we were invited down to London to take the proper course. So in between that, I went via Liverpool to say hello to my parents. And I told my father, just after three lessons, that actually he was no longer my father. He was my brother. Well, I was only 24. Now, that took quite a few years to put right. And, you know, surprise, surprise, why was he concerned that we were getting into this strange Indian thing, you know, going vegetarian and changing our lifestyle and zipping off to India? Well, you can imagine why he was worried, especially when I told him that he was actually no longer my father, but my brother. He's okay now. But I would suggest, if you haven't done that, don't. You know, I would suggest, and I mean, this is real, you know, this is real stuff. I know intoxicated Brahmins who've sent postcards, usually the Madhuban style postcards, not the, you know, Naki Lake, you know, the Trimurti, or, "Dear all, having a great time, wish you were here, visited the temple, etc. Met God yesterday, got totally from God, see you back next week." Yeah, I know, I didn't do that, but, you know, I know. When I, you know, I used to put Shiv Baba stickers on my dental unit, can you imagine? You know, remember Shiv. We didn't think, actually. Now, I've invented a new word. Natural, in essence, means to be mature. So instead of being natural, I don't know if there's how it translates, but we can invent this new word called matural. It means whatever you hear or see in Brahmin life, you have to catch it in a way that's useful for you in your own context. Yes, all the Mariyadas and all that stuff, that's one thing, but this is the theory, you know. Yes, brother, you have to do this. But that, why is Baba saying that? You know, why is Baba asking us to get up early? You know, why is Baba asking us to study each day? Why is Baba saying, keep good company? You know, come to Madhuban each year, or if you can't get to Madhuban, get on a retreat. You know, is Baba and the seniors telling us those things just to do our head in, to feel pressured? Well, what's the principle behind those things? I mean, you know, that's why you need to work with, and that's why, rather than thinking, "No, why am I told to do this?" Why is Baba saying that? Now, I didn't have a problem with that when I first came, because, you know, I don't know, I just felt it. I just did everything naturally. I used to scare Sister Maureen because I thought, "Well, she's a sister. She's my sister now." So I just, well, if she said it, I'd do it. Because I just think, well, Baba keeps the system. You know what I mean? It's like, but if you think about that, that has a virtue in it, but there's also a downside. And the downside is that I stop using my own intellect. Now, it's useful to stop using your intellect, but when Baba or Daddy says, "Don't use your intellect," she doesn't mean don't use your intellect, does she? like, because once Daddy said, don't think, so I went and asked Daddy, do you really mean don't think? Because this was the first thing Baba said to me, don't think too much. Seems to be quite a common theme for foreigners. You know, let Baba do the thinking, let Baba take responsibility. So I've been thinking about what it means not to think for 30 years. So when Baba and Daddy are saying don't think, it doesn't mean don't think, but you mean don't think excessively. And Daddy's been talking a lot about this, hasn't she, this last couple of days? You know, saving energy, not thinking too much, not thinking when I don't need to. So not using my intellect doesn't mean I don't use my intellect. It means I use my intellect in the right way. And nowadays, mostly you go to Daddy. When we came, Daddy, what do I do? How do I do this? And she, yeah, do this. And now, what are you going to say? I know the very first thing she's going to ask us isn't Joshna. Daddy, this is happening. What's she going to say? She's going to say, Joshna, what do you think? And has that been useful? Has it made sense? Yeah. I mean, I'm just sharing some of the things which I think are like signposts. And you need to think about it. I mean, this isn't a topic. This is a topic for us all, really. There's degrees, isn't there? Mm. Okay, I mean, is there anything you want to comment on or clarify? I mean, even just 5 minutes. No. And, I mean, you know, if you have any more insights, come and tell me, because this is work in progress. And I need to be able to, okay, whatever you want to call them, mistakes, but, you know, even a mistake is I missed the chance to take. And Mama's speciality, she never made the same mistake twice. So I learn. And then if I learn, and I really, you know, Baba says everything is good, but, you know, is it just theory for me? I used to think that's what being Brahmin, like, you know, I'm serious, I want to be serious about my Brahmin life. And but being serious, actually, I think in Hindi, gambir, actually sometimes it's translated as mysterious, but it means mature. Brahma Baba was like gambir and ramnik. It's like the balance between being deep and mature and like entertaining, and you know, like Baba was very light. So it's something to check. If my lightness isn't increasing, it means I just need to adjust something. Okay, I better not make you late. So if you have any more things to share, come and tell me. Because it's a nice ongoing topic, actually. And some of you I know, but a lot of you, it's new faces. It's nice, huh? Okay, Om Shanti.